We're going back into Genesis. And just kind of a reminder, as we're going to be in Genesis chapter 25, verse 19 and following today. But I thought it just maybe just kind of a reminder of how Genesis is laid out. There's really two different ways that most people divide up the book of Genesis. Number one is the primeval versus the patriarchal history. So primeval means before. So the primeval history or section of Genesis is the first 11 chapters, and there's four great events in those first 11 chapters. There's the creation, the fall, the flood, and the tower. So that's one way to divide up Genesis. And then Genesis 12 through 50 focuses, the patriarchal history focuses on four great people, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. So kind of two ways that people divide up Genesis, the primeval history and the patriarchal history. And then the other way that people like to divide up Genesis is through the Toledot statements. And we talked, Toledot is a Hebrew word, and it's translated as generations into English. And I kind of put those up there just as a reminder. There's 10 different Toledots, a prologue at the beginning. And we're going to be, we're in chapter 25, so we're in Toledot, we'll, in Toledot number eight. Yeah, we're going to be talking about Isaac. So we're moving right along with the Toledots, but there's a lot of information left for us to cover in the book of Genesis. And we noted before, too, as we've walked through this, that the Toledot really focuses on what follows. So like, for instance, the Toledot of Terah in the sixth one. We didn't talk about much about Terah, but we talked a lot about what followed Terah, which was his son Abraham. Okay, and we're going to see the same thing in the Toledot of Isaac. There's not a lot of information about Isaac, but there's going to be a lot of focus on his son Jacob. So kind of a similar thing, the Toledot of Terah and the Toledot of Isaac. So in chapter 25, which is where we left off, chapter 25 is a very busy chapter because we finished up in the first 11 verses, we completed the Toledot of Terah, again, the father of Abraham, talking about Abraham in here, and that began in Genesis chapter 11, verse 27, so we spent a lot of time on Abraham, and then in verse 12 through 18, which we already covered, we had the Toledot of Ishmael, and of course, Ishmael was the half-brother of Isaac. Abraham's son by Hagar, Sarah's Egyptian maid, his wife's Egyptian maid, and that's the shortest of the Toledots. And there's, you know, just a few verses in there about Ishmael, and really that Toledot is transitional. It's moving us to Isaac and then to his son in particular, Jacob. So we'll pick up in verse 19 of chapter 25. Now these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham became the father of Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Paddan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. So again here, the Toledot, the generations of Isaac, the eighth one. It's going to run through chapter 35, verse 29. Again, the focus in this is going to really be on his son Jacob. And Isaac receives, I think maybe I already mentioned this, but he really receives the least attention of the four patriarchs. So really only one chapter devoted specifically and exclusively to Isaac. So he becomes kind of a transitional figure here. Isaac's role, I like how one person put it, Isaac's role is essential but relatively quiet compared to Abraham and then Jacob and Joseph. So the covenant was established and founded with Abraham. So Abraham was a key focus. And then the 12 tribes, and thus the nation of Israel, is going to emerge from Isaac's son Joseph. So there's a lot of information on Jacob. And then Joseph, God's going to use Joseph to preserve the nation Israel through crisis. So again, Isaac's a little bit more of a transitional, less focus on him figure. We have talked a lot about Isaac, though, when we were looking at Abraham's life. And in Genesis chapter 17, that's where God promised Abraham and Sarah that Isaac would be born. So we have that promise that they're going to have a son, Isaac. And then in Genesis 18, the Lord, Yahweh, he announced the timing of Isaac's birth. He was going to come, you know, Abraham's 100 and Sarah's 90. So kind of aged parents. I think we've joked about this before, but our daughter had a baby in December and she's 41. And I told her, at least you're not Sarah in 90, but she didn't laugh. So it was one of those jokes I shouldn't have done, probably. But yeah, so we saw, and then in Genesis chapter 21, we saw the birth of Isaac, again, Abraham 100, Sarah at 90. And then in chapter 22, we saw the sacrifice of Isaac. So that was quite a moment at Mount Moriah where Abraham, you know, the Lord instructs Abraham to offer as a sacrifice his one and only beloved son. And so the actions in that chapter, in chapter 22, were really on Abraham, but of course, Isaac played a quiet but integral role because he's on the altar and doing these things, and you're wondering what's going through Isaac's mind, but we don't really know. He was old enough at that time to carry wood for the sacrifice, so it's not like he was two. You know, there's speculation as to his age at that point, but some kind of teen or older teen or early 20s. So he could have, I don't think any of my sons would have trusted me to lay them on an altar with starting a fire underneath. But so obviously he was a man of faith. And then chapter 24, we saw the details of the selection of Rebekah to marry Isaac, and then the marriage of Rebekah and Isaac in chapter 24. And if back in chapter 24, let's go back there just real quick. In Genesis chapter 24, down in verse 3, again, Abraham is sending his servant back to Abraham's homeland. Of course, Abraham lives in that, you know, in Canaan. And he's very explicit in his instructions to his servant in verse 3. And I will make you swear by Yahweh, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I live, but you will go to my land and to my kin and take a wife for my son, Isaac. So again, he was very, very specific there that Isaac could not marry a Canaanite. He had to marry someone from Abraham's homeland, which would be back in Mesopotamia, in Haran, in that general area. We talked a little bit about how the Canaanite culture and how evil the Canaanite culture was, you know, characterized by idolatry and polytheism and immorality and sacrificing sons on an altar. So Abraham didn't want the covenant line to be corrupted by a Canaanite woman coming into the family. And again, the Old Testament, we talked about this before, but the Old Testament constantly warns the Israelites about the dangers of intermarriage and what that would lead to. So obviously they ignore them on sometimes, but it would lead to terrible things. Okay, and then go back to chapter 25. So again, these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham became the father of Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel. And so Bethuel, we've talked about Bethuel before. He was the son of Abraham's brother, Nahor. So again, Abraham had two brothers, Nahor and Haran, and Bethuel was the son of Nahor, and Nahor, who married his niece Milcah. We won't get into all that again because we walked through some of those interconnections there. But the end result is that Abraham's son Isaac marries Abraham's great niece Rebekah. Okay, that's kind of the relationship in there. So Abraham or Isaac and Rebekah are, we had a little debate on that. I think it's best to look at them as first cousins once removed is probably the technical way to refer to their relationship. And of course, we know that close relative marriage was common in biblical times. It's going to be outlawed in the Mosaic Law. And Moses is writing all this, but he's writing it, you know, half a millennia, centuries after these events occurred. So, and we talked too about how in early days, before a lot of genetic corruptions came, you know, the genetic consequences of close intermarriage wasn't there. So there wasn't a physical reason not to marry close relatives. but it sure sounds gross. It does. So we've been implanted with that, and that's good, because today close intermarriage would lead to a lot of genetic imperfections, and the gene pool would decline quicker than what it is already is. And then it mentions in verse 20, Paddan Aram. And this is the first of 10 references in Genesis to Paddan Aram. That's a plain or field. That's a definition of it. Plain or field of Aram. And that's in, again, north. That's Abraham's home country, home area, northeast Mesopotamia, in which the town of Haran was situated. And we oftentimes, Aram is equated with Syria. So kind of on the southern, on the southern boundary of Turkey, if you look at a modern map. That would be the general area. But again, Abraham's native country and where his family, his extended family, lived. And then Aramean, just as an inhabitant of Aram, which again is equated with Syria. Let's go back to chapter 24. Just to pick up we see at the end of chapter 24, we looked at Rebekah and Isaac's marriage. And it's kind of a nice, tender love story in there in the midst of all the stuff that's going on. But let's go down to verse 62. Now Isaac had come from going to Beer Lahai-Roi, for he was living in the land of the Negev. Okay, so Isaac back a little south of Canaan. And Isaac went out to muse in the field toward evening, and he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, camels were coming. So this is going to be Abraham's servant returning from Mesopotamia, and he's got Rebekah with him. Then the servant, in verse 64, and Rebekah lifted up her eyes and saw Isaac and dismounted from the camel. Then she said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "He is my master." Then she took her veil and covered herself. And the servant recounted to Isaac all the things that he had done. Again, just the miraculous way that Rebekah had come to the fore and had raised up as the one selected for Isaac's wife. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and Sarah would have been dead for about 3 years at this time or so. And he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. Thus Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So again, this marriage starts out in a very positive thing. We're going to see some differences as we continue to walk through Isaac's life, but started out as a genuine love story. So back to Genesis chapter 5. Verse 20, Isaac's 40 years old when he marries Rebekah. So his father, Abraham, would be 140 at this time. His half-brother, Ishmael, would be about 54. So kind of just some of those family ages in there. So verse 21, and Isaac entreated Yahweh on behalf of his wife, excuse me, because she was barren, and Yahweh was moved by his entreaty, so Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So Isaac, a man of prayer, turns to Yahweh. That word entreated is also translated prayed and pleaded. It's like he's on his knees, Lord, we don't have a child. Now remember what Abraham and Sarah did when they didn't have a child. They tried to adopt in a servant to serve as the heir. And then they took an extra wife, Hagar, to bear a son for an heir. Well, here we have this positive example of Isaac turning to Yahweh. He doesn't come up with any other plans. Now, he's praying to the Lord for 20 years. It's going to be 20 years before Isaac is born. So 20 years is a long time to wait. But he's faithful and persistent in his prayer during this time. So he entreats, he prayed, he pleaded to the Lord that he would have a son. And we're going to he's 60 years old in verse 26 when Isaac is born. So again, from 40 years old to 60 years old before the son is born. So very, very patient. So, and then Yahweh grants, he answers Isaac's prayer. Rebekah conceives, and again, Isaac will be born after 20 years of, that patient and persistent prayer. Okay, so verse 22. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is so, why then am I this way?" So she went to inquire of Yahweh. So, the wife following the husband's faithful example of prayer. Why is this occurring? Why is this happening to me? I like the way that's how ESV and NIV translated. You know, those babies, they're struggling. And that word struggle is a powerful word. It comes from the word that means to crush. So there's a lot going on in there. It's a very emphatic language. There's a lot of distress. I don't know that I can relate to it in any way, but some of you, about half of you, can kind of relate to what might be happening in there, but the struggle going on in there. And so she's like, why is this happening to me? What's going on? Why this extreme distress? Verse 23, and Yahweh said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples will be separated from your body. And one people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So, you know, Rebecca here, she's only the seventh person that God has spoken to directly in the 2,000 years since creation. So that's pretty nice position to be in. He talked with Adam and Eve in the garden and after the fall. You know, he talked with Cain in chapter four, warning him before he murdered his brother Abel, and then confronting him after the murder. Obviously, he talked with Noah multiple times in Genesis chapter 6 through 9, talked with Abraham multiple times in Genesis 12 through 22, and then talked with Hagar, if you kind of remember her story, which was really impactful. Instructs Hagar twice in the wilderness. In Genesis chapter 16, Hagar had fled Abraham's household because Sarah had been persecuting her because she was pregnant. Hagar was pregnant and Sarah wasn't, and that didn't get along very well then. And then in chapter 21, Hagar's banished from the household by Sarah. So God again comes to her in the wilderness to encourage her and instruct her. So this prophecy in verse 23 of chapter 25, the prophecy, she's pregnant with twins. And the conflict in her womb is between two boys, and it prefigures the enmity that's going to exist between the two peoples that they will father, that these two sons will father. And, of course, that's the Israelites and the Edomites. And we'll see that another name for Esau becomes Edom, and we'll see that when we get to verse 30. So, again, the Israelites and the Edomites become bitter enemies who fought continuously. And then, you know, the older shall serve the younger. And that's not quite as big a deal in our culture to hear that said, but in the ancient Near East culture, the older child, the oldest son took precedence over everyone else. And Esau is going to be born before Jacob. So the older will serve the younger. Again, that's just the you know, by God's choice, that's what he chose, how he chose this to be. Jacob will be the preeminent son. So God sovereignly and unconditionally selected the younger son to be the child of promise, to carry on the messianic line and inherit the promises of the Abrahamic covenant. Again, very contrary to ancient Near Eastern custom. Again, God's elective purposes transcends custom. He's not bound by the rules that we follow. So verse 24. And her days to give birth were fulfilled, and behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came forth red all over like a hairy garment. And they named him Esau. Afterward, his brother came forth with his hand holding on to Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 60 years old when she gave birth to them. So again, as promised, Rebekah had twins and fulfilling God's, Yahweh's word to her. And there's some interesting word plays in these names. And Esau, the word red comes from the same root word as Edom, which becomes another name for Esau that we'll see down in verse 30. And then that becomes the name of the country that he and his descendants will live in. They'll live in Edom. They're the Edomites. Okay, so that's kind of where this is going to come from. That word red is related to that. And then the word hairy sounds very similar. The Hebrew word for hairy is sear. And it's very similar to Seir, which becomes the name, which is the name of the country where Edom is. That's probably an earlier name for Edom. So kind of connecting all these things together with word plays. We don't pick up on that in English. You know, we're going to understand key points even without understanding Hebrew, but those are just some interesting word plays that come out in this section. And that word heresiar, again, sounds very similar to Seir, the early name for the country of Edom, but also sounds somewhat similar to the Hebrew name Esau. So there's some similarity between Heri and Esau as well. And then in verse 26, Jacob comes out, and Jacob comes from the same root word as the word for heel. So Jacob and heel are kind of the same things. And what's happening here? You know, they give Jacob this name to commemorate the event. He's hanging on to Esau's heel. And I like the NASB note, that particular word, one who takes by the heel or supplants, you know, overcome. And that's going to come to pass because the older will serve the younger. So I like Mike Voss. I was reading some of his notes. I like the way he put this. It said, hanging on as if he were trying somehow to pull Esau back into the womb. It's like, no, I'm first, you know, grabbing his heel and, you know, like pulling him back. And again, that prefigures this competition and strife between these two brothers and their descendants. In verse 27, and the boys grew up. Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a peaceful man living in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he had an appetite for hunted game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So this is kind of a bad situation where you have this family favoritism and it's different favorites between the spouses. And Esau was this rugged outdoorsman hunter type. That word field is also translated open country. So he liked to go out and hunt. And Jacob was more domestic. You know, he was a kind of a good cook and stuff. And that word peaceful, describing Jacob, is literally the word complete. And it's also translated quiet, mild, even-tempered. So he was content, I like the way the NIV puts it, he was content to stay at home among the tents. That's where he found his peace. That's where he found his satisfaction and contentment. He wanted to be home helping mom cook. So, of course, mom likes the kid that's going to stay home, and dad likes the one that's going to be out hunting. So, again, we get this favoritism. Isaac loved Esau, and he was the rugged outdoorsman who's going to bring home some good old stew meat. He's going to bring home the deer, is the idea. And Rebekah loved Jacob. He's the quiet boy who loved to stay at home with mom. And also, too, Rebekah knew the prophecy that she had been given, that the older would serve the younger. And there's debate. Did she share that with Isaac? You would assume so, that she would have shared that with her husband. But there's some who say there's no actual evidence that she shared that with Isaac. So that might be one reason why Isaac didn't favor Jacob like maybe he should have, since Jacob was the one in the prophecy who was going to prevail. But so anyway, again, Isaac's actions suggest that maybe he didn't know the prophecy, that maybe Rebekah hadn't shared it. But it's all contentious, you know, contention. There's no facts one way or the other. But the favoritism and the tension that it creates sets the stage for what happens next. There's going to be family conflict and tragedy, but God is going to sovereignly use, as he always does, even human conflict to accomplish his plans and purposes. Okay, verse 29. And Jacob had cooked stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was famished. Then Esau said to Jacob, please give me a swallow from the red stuff, this red stuff, for I am famished. Therefore, his name was called Edom. So again, becomes the name Edom, which is basically the same word as red. Those two are very related. That word famished is also translated exhausted and weary. Means to be faint or weary. I don't know if there's any other type 1 diabetics, low blood sugar. Can kind of relate to that. You know, you just like can't do anything. And that's what he's saying. He's coming in very emphatically. I'm exhausted. I'm famished. I need to eat, and I need to eat now. And that red stuff, it's going to be called lentil stew, down in verse 34. And the lentils, you know, my wife found some at Walmart. They're like a pea-type, beanie-type, you know, thing that you'd put in stew. And typically in this day, it would have been prepared with onions and garlic and rice and olive oil and served with lamb or some other kind of meat. So, Yeah, after a day working out in the garden, I can come in, honey, I'm starved. The lentil stew would be like perfect to have sitting on the table. And it would have been a favorite food in Palestine. That word stew is interesting. It comes from the word to boil up. So, you know, you're boiling up your stew, the same word there. And again, Edom means red. There's 111 references in the Old Testament to Edom or the Edomites. And again, the animosity that develops between the Edomites and the Israelites. Okay, verse 31. But Jacob said, first sell me your birthright. So in that word first is literally today. And if you have an ESV translation, it says, sell me your birthright now. You know, do it now. Or in New King James, sell me your birthright as of this day. You know, sell me your birthright and I'll give you the food. And it's hard for us to relate to the idea of a birthright because, again, this was, in this particular culture, the birthright was the legal right of the firstborn son. You know, after the father died, the firstborn son took precedence over his brothers. He got a double share of inheritance. We're told that very clearly in Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 17. But he also becomes the head and spiritual leader of his family. So he's like the leader of the clan then. And in Jacob's case, it's also involves being in the line that was produced the Messiah. So it would be the chosen line. You could lose your birthright for various sinful activities, or it could be bartered or sold. There's evidence in historical records that that did occur. So what here is, you know, Jacob saying, I'll give you the stew if you give me the birthright. Okay, verse 32. And Esau said, behold, I'm about to die. So of what use then is the birthright to me? And Jacob said, first swear to me. So he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. So Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and he ate and drank and rose and went away. Thus Esau despised his birthright. So here we have Jacob clearly realized the value of having the birthright, okay, but Esau didn't value the birthright at all. I mean, yes, he's starving and he's hungry and he's willing to throw all that away in order to, you know, he cared more about his hungry stomach than he did for the important rights and responsibilities and honors that were his by birth. He just gave it all away. You know, he only saw and craved food. You know, he's governed by faith and not by sight. There's a lot of lessons to get out of this. He's governed by sight and not by faith. And, you know, this was really a reflection of his total disregard for spiritual things. And that word despised in verse 34, NASB translates that, they translate it despised, but it's also translated in NASB as in other settings as careless or contempt or despicable. So again, he basically treated something sacred as trivial and with contempt. You know, it's kind of like for us, it's a little bit, it's not part of our culture, so it's hard to understand the intensity of what's going on here. You know, he's throwing all this away to eat. You know, he exchanged his destiny. I like how one guy put it, he exchanged his destiny for a dinner. You know, he's starving and he's going to throw things away. There's some attempt to defend Esau a little bit, talking about the boy's age at this time. And we're not told how old the boys are. Some would hold that they were they had to be at least 15, okay? And that's the age when Abraham died. But then he could also be as old as 40. So somewhere between 15 and 40. Well, if a 15-year-old does something stupid, you're kind of like a little more forgiving. If a 40-year-old does something stupid, you slap him in the face. They shouldn't be doing it. So there's a little bit of, you know, well, he wasn't that old. But I think most people agree that he was probably closer, more aged than 15. He was, you know, 30s or 40s, you know, up to 40 probably. Again, the biblical record isn't specific, but Esau's action, attitude and action are clearly viewed as a moral and spiritual favor. Failure. And Hebrews chapter 12, verse 16, you know, talks about Esau. He's a godless person. He sold his birthright for a single meal. Okay, so again, that reflected his spiritual status. He's a godless man in the New Testament. So, and again, Jacob took advantage of his brother's impulsiveness. You know, this is an opportunity for gain. Wow, I'm going to, you know, get the baseball card that's worth $1 jillion or something like that for my brother. And so he's going to play things up here. He sought a good and honorable thing, but in a bad way. And that's general agreement. You know, the birthright would be his. And he probably knew that from his mother. You know, maybe, maybe not. But, you know, you need to trust God and not take up things in your own way. And again, this was doing an honorable thing, seeking an honorable thing, but in a very bad way. And I like the way one commentator put it, Jacob is commended for desiring the birthright and appreciating the honor of possessing it, but he's not to be praised for his method, okay, for the way he went about it. He was crafty and deceitful, you know, and that's reflected in his name, supplanter, heel, supplanter. And I like one commentator, Ross, talked about the application for us even. You know, believers should seek things of spiritual value, but avoid the devices of the flesh. I mean, that's, we want good things. We want right things. We want to serve God. But if we have to turn to the flesh to do that, you know, we need to rely on God and not on our own devices. And so then Jacob, he wants the transaction official. So wanted Esau to confirm the deal by taking a formal oath. You know, kind of like swearing on the Bible, kind of. So Esau does that. You know, he complies. And we will find out when we get to chapter 27, he's going to try to get the birthright back anyway. So he's a liar, you know, type guy. So he's, again, a man of very questionable ethics. But he agrees. He says, it's yours. Just give me that stew. You know, wonder how much of it he ate. And I hope he enjoyed that meal a lot because that set the stage for his future. I do think it's important to note, you know, God's sovereign hand divinely directs things towards accomplishing his plans and purposes. You know, he uses even the sins of man to accomplish. I mean, look what he did with Jesus. You know, he used the sinfulness of man to accomplish the death of his son on the cross. So, you know, we think that the bad people are getting away with something. Well, they're not. You know, God is using everything. How frustrating for evil people to find out eventually that God used their evil to accomplish his good. That would be frustrating to a wicked person. But I like the, Gil put it this way. He said, the words spoken to Rebekah by the Lord came to fruition. The older will indeed serve the younger. God's sovereign choice of Jacob over Esau before they were born in no way freed Esau from his responsibility for his choice. So again, we kind of have that interaction between God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. You know, God may use our actions, controls the actions, oversees everything, but humans are still accountable for the decisions that they make. So we'll go ahead and good stopping point there. And next week, chapter 26, again, this is the only chapter, if you're an Isaac lover, don't miss next week, because this is the only chapter devoted pretty much exclusively to Isaac. We'll see the reiteration and confirmation of the covenant with Isaac, and then Isaac's dealings with Abimelech. His name should sound familiar. But anyway, does anybody have any questions or comments on the lesson? Denny, anything else? Okay, let's go ahead and close in prayer. Dear Father, again, we want to just praise you and thank you so much for this time together. We want to just thank you, and we praise you, Father, for the sovereign control that you exercise over everything. And nothing is going to knock your plan off course. Just the great confidence that gives us as we journey through this mortal life. We just thank you, Father, for the great men of old, for Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and for the way that you use them to bring about the covenant that we now benefit from, the covenant of salvation through faith in Christ. We just ask you, Father, to bless us as we leave this room today. We ask you, Father, to help us be sensitive to your leading in every decision we make and in everything we do. Help us to have pure thoughts and a desire to serve you, again, at all times without resorting to the flesh and our own devices to accomplish what we see as your will. We just thank you again for your love and grace and mercy. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, thank you.